Oh, these recordings get posted. My business manager, Michelle, is on maternity leave. Can you believe it? She had a baby. Anyway, this kid, she has no idea how fortunate she is. This little girl sleeps 98% of the time. She's very lucky so far. We'll see how that goes. But anyway, and so I record them, and then as quickly as possible, they get posted to the Buddhist meditation page on my personal website, rickhansonson.net. I think they also get posted to wisebrain.org. That's what they are. Yeah. And so be thoughtful about your voice. It probably isn't audible on the recording, but think about that. Just be aware that I'm recording this and we'll post it. But for me, it's part of the principle of the teachings, you know, to offer them freely, and lots of teachers do this kind of practice. Okay, so recently we've been focused on, in a way, the heart of Buddha Dharma, which is the relationship between clinging and suffering. And therefore, the relationship between the end of clinging and the end of suffering. And then, not just a kind of blank or numbness, but as the Buddha said, the highest happiness, the most sublime, unconditional happiness of all, a profound peace, and love and joy mingled together. So, I wanted to kind of have more of a discussion tonight about this and really sort of bring it down to the real of your own experience and understanding of this. So to kind of set the table, what we've explored are the ways in which, at least as the Buddha taught, and then we are to see for ourselves, any sort of clutching at or clinging to or craving for any content of mind. In other words, any sensation, any sound, any sight, any smell, any taste, or any emotion, any idea, any sense of self, any sense of the pleasant or the unpleasant, even consciousness itself, any clinging to anything at all, takes us right into suffering. Suffering intrinsically, because there's a sense of contraction and dis-ease and tension in the clinging itself, and suffering in the causes that ripple out from that act in terms of stress, getting upset, getting positional, harming ourselves and others. That's the basic idea. So, to have it be a little more real, maybe, I want to invite you to do two little reflections, and then we'll talk about it, and then we'll do a third with a bit of practice about it. And then I thought we could really kind of explore this. Okay. So, the first step in this little reflection, these two reflections, first reflection, is to, if you could, bring to mind something that's an upset for you. In other words, something in your life or that's quite alive currently, or whenever you think about it or remember it, it gets you. It's not, I wouldn't go after something profoundly traumatic here. And also, a lot of the stuff that upsets us on the 0 to 10 scale, it's a 1 or a 2, but it's real. So maybe it's that feeling you get when you wake up in the morning and you left the kitchen all clean and tidy, and then your young adult or teenage children were up late, and you walk out and it's a disaster. Or that feeling you get when the phone rings and someone's on the phone you don't really want to talk to, it's awkward with. Or maybe you're struggling in some area, you long for something, or you're frustrated about something, or something makes you anxious. Just pick something, anything, that for you is, it's real. When you think of it, you can feel yourself getting reactivated. It could be a little thing, like trying to walk out of a movie theater and two people are standing right there in the doorway talking to each other, right? Long lost friends. Or maybe it's a neighbor who's kind of nasty or not responsible for the way their trees fallen on your yard. Could be how you feel when someone gets intense with you. Maybe someone's angry. Maybe how you feel when, if you contemplate being assertive or speaking more vulnerably. Everybody have one? It'll work if you have one. At least one thing that even after all these years upsets you. I don't mean all these years like it happened way then, but after all these years of practice, it still gets you. Okay? Got one? Everybody have one? Okay. So then here's the second question. In what ways, one way or another, is craving or clinging, attachment, woven into the upset, causing it? As kind of a guide, the Buddha mentioned four primary categories, if you will, of attachment. You might see if any one of those are at work. One is what he called attachment to gaining pleasures and reducing pains. In other words, maybe there's a reaching after, a drivenness for what's something that's pleasant to continue or grow or occur in the first place. Or maybe there's a grasping after something unpleasant to push it away or make it not happen, and a fixation about that. That's the first category. Second category, back then he called it rites and rituals. Today we might update it to routines or schedules or plans. Any clinging to plans or schedules? Orderliness, things going the right way. Third category, views, clinging to views, some attachment to a position or a case or being right in some way or they're wrong in some way, proving the point, prevailing. And then the fourth category, he mentioned, was attachment to self, being a self-referential quality in the upset for you. Ego. Maybe a sense of narcissistic injury. These would be examples of activations of clinging or craving, attachment. So you might just explore, I'll be quiet for a minute or so. How might these factors of clinging or craving be causing your suffering or at cause in your suffering? Okay. So, you know, getting as personal as you're willing to get in this public setting, cannot guarantee your confidentiality, but I think we're good-hearted in here. What do you see about the relationship between some form of clinging or craving and your suffering? Please.
I see that it's never going to change.
The situation? Is that what you mean?
The person, you know.
Yeah.
You just can't see it, no matter. You know, it's just so aggravating because it's so obvious and, you know, there's a lot of denial and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really bothers me. But it doesn't help me to be bothered by it because it's innate in that person.
Yeah. What are you clinging to that keeps making it suffering for you?
I want to admit.
Yeah. Okay.
And see how wrong it was.
Yeah.
And I saw him write it in a letter and totally admit to it. But in 3.5 years, he just flat out turns it around.
Yeah.
It's so odd.
Yeah, got it.
Yeah.
So the clinging in this case, let's say, is to the other person being a way or acting a certain way or giving us the satisfaction of admitting something
mm-hmm.
or copping to something.
Yeah, I want that satisfaction.
Yeah.
Yes.
And to me, that's a great example. We're not talking here about someone who's attached to shooting up, you know, every night with heroin. We're talking about an attachment to something wholesome. It's reasonable that we would want another person to take responsibility
mm-hmm.
or acknowledge an injustice, let's say. But still, you know, suffering comes when we want unwholesome things or we pursue them in unwholesome ways.
Mm-hmm.
Unwholesome meaning broadly with craving, right? It's a wholesome desire, but sought with, right, craving, thus suffering. Okay, great. Other examples. The realness for you. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to preserve the other participant's identity by not telling you the name of my cat.
Okay.
It was low tide and saw slid on my boat. Sits on mud when it's low tide. It's very odoriferous mud and miles thick. My cat usually just runs around my boat on the decks. This day, however, he got overly adventuresome. While I was drinking coffee at the desk through the window, I heard this plop, plop, plop. And I looked outside, and I thought, are those the tracks of a bird? They look kind of funny for bird tracks. They weren't.
Yeah.
He had jumped into the mud, splattered around in there, ran away, because I only saw his tracks going to the back of the boat. So I thought, uh-oh. I went outside, onto the deck, and I turned left. And when I came back to the doorway, there was a long trail of muddy tracks coming to the door. He went inside. First he ran over the couch. Then, fortunately, he did miss my desk and my computer, but he got the couch pretty good. Then he went up and down the middle passageway. Then he got onto his bed, which he allows me to consider as my bed, too.
Uh-huh.
And he went back and forth on that. Then I saw him, and he was like, mud.
Yeah.
So I had to grab him with a towel, take him to the bathtub, and wash him. Meanwhile, this is where the clinging and the grasping and everything else comes in. My boat's a freaking mess.
Yeah.
And I have to go to work today. And that's just what an animal is like.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
It only took those few steps.
Hmm.
To get to, that's what an animal is like.
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, so there you were, the situation, right? The suffering, you're upset about it. You realize there's a need for it to be a way that it's not.
Yeah.
And then you have a realization that gets you out of it. We're going to talk about getting out of it in a little bit. But it's all there in your story, isn't it?
Yeah, it was good.
That's great. How about other examples? And we're talking the connection between suffering and clinging. Yeah.
Mine is when I'm in my house, I don't like to hear. I live in a condo. I have people on both sides. I don't like to hear my neighbor's noise. You know, the kids playing, screaming outside. I think that my home is my sanctuary. It should be peaceful and quiet.
Yeah. Right. And so the clinging, in a sense, is not liking it, right?
Yes.
You don't like it. It's unpleasant and. In the sort of analysis here, there would be an aversion to the unpleasantness and an attachment to the pleasantness of quiet.
Yes, I think in order to really enjoy my
home,
I have to have it quiet.
Yeah, great.
And I'm attached to that.
Right, so there's also a view in it. It's not just that it's pleasant when it's quiet and unpleasant when it's noisy. There's a belief, like, I should be able to have it quiet. And we get attached or identified with those beliefs. They seem so reasonable, don't they?
Thank you.
Especially when we possess them. All right. Oh, good. Great. See the links again? And it's really helpful to look just quite carefully at where does the clinging construct suffering. In effect, since it's constructed, it's not so necessary. Any other examples or confusions about this? Yeah. Right.
Then you can move away from it. Yeah, that's the way it is.
Okay, good. So here too, moving to the third step, in effect, how do we get to freedom? In other words, how do we help ourselves relax the clinging, relax the attachment, right? Including by seeing the catness of other people. Okay. Any other questions or examples of the linking between suffering and problematic desire? Suffering and clinging.
Yeah, I'd like to bring at least one example of attachment to fun.
That led to suffering?
Well, still trying to figure out in which measure is that problematic, except for my eventually having an accident, the way I ride my motorcycle, the way I drive my car. It's like, say, oh, he's just a Frenchman, or and I think, well, there's some kind of intra-psychic personality or split personality that takes over totally. And it's the 20-year-old rebel that I mean, I'm 60-something. You'd think by now I would have given up, but as soon as I hear the roar, and I feel the 1600 cc's just between my legs.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a lot of fun, but what do you do with it?
Well, is it working for you so far?
Oh, yeah.
Well.
But no, I'm talking about taking risks and just being unaware of people or just plain disregarding people, because I, of course, have to be in front of any line there is.
You mean with your motorcycle or just in general?
Yes.
Uh-huh, yeah. So to me, what you're getting at is this very interesting place of exploration, and where it seems like there are certain passions, or we're carried in flow. We're just really caught up in baking in a neat new way, or we're gardening, or making love, or riding our motorcycle, or we want to get to the top of the mountain, in my own case, say, or something like that, you know? I don't get that that's problematic, right? The interesting question a lot, with a lot of these things, we're trying to start a business, we're trying to get something good going in our neighborhood with our kids with a stop sign or something like that, right? All these various wholesome, energetic pursuits, there's not an inherent problem with those. Think of all the wholesome, enthusiastic pursuit the Buddha engaged to start a brand new religion, all right? And we're in the room 2,500 years later talking about it. It's interesting, though, when that tipping point happens, when we start moving from wholesome aims pursued in wholesome ways, let's say without attachment to a result, with joy, with peace. And then when does it tip over? And then we have to watch that. And just the way the brain works is that the more excited it gets, the more vulnerable it gets in the tipping into a negative stress response place. And the trick is to sustain that enthusiastic passion aliveness without it tipping over. You see, that isn't that really an art? And I find a lot of where that tips for me is right around the shift from kind of like relaxed, flowing passion to any kind of fixation or attachment. Like, I want this good feeling to last, or I don't just want to enjoy my bike, I want to beat you, because I have 1,700 cc's between my legs. Or, not really, but anyway. So you know what I mean? Then you tip over and you just kind of watch it. So anyway, so that's what I have to say about that. But I think it's important to appreciate there's plenty of place for wholesome ends pursued in wholesome ways. But it's also important to be careful about that. Let's do a different thing. Let's do the third thing. So go back, if you could, to the same upset. And in particular, try to zero in on one form of clinging for you. You know, we've had some examples, one kind of attachment, you know, positionality, ego, view, need. Okay. And then ask yourself, regarding the situation, what resource, what factor in your own mind would help you relax and release the clinging? Maybe an understanding, that's a factor. Like the catness of people, that's a kind of understanding. Maybe an understanding that it hurts you more than them to hold on to a position, or that it's hopeless, you'll never get blood from that particular stone. Or maybe just a kind of a wider opening and softening and relaxing that undoes the contraction of clinging. Or maybe there's a kind of warm-heartedness, a compassion for yourself, for others, perhaps a sense of being loved. You don't need to worry so much about this particular thing. Be a relaxing of me, myself, and I in the mix. Not taking it so personally, not attributing that you're being personally targeted by the loud neighbors or whatever it is. So find a thing, and then we'll talk about it in a minute. Find what works for you. A resource in the mind, a factor. The Buddha was very focused on factors in the mind. And then when you have it, try to really help it become a very full experience for you. What's your sense of this factor that would undo your clinging? What's it feel like? And then see if you can give over to it. Give over to it as an understanding, or give over to it as a softening and relaxing, a letting go in the body, or give over to it as a warm-heartedness, a sense of being loved and or loving, or give over to a releasing of selfing. Take in the good, as it were, of this resource factor in your own mind, so you install it in your brain. Staying with it as an experience, extending it, getting a sense of it, sensing that you're absorbing it as well, that it's sinking in. This factor is becoming more and more of a part of you. Might, as a bonus, even imagine being lived by this factor, or this factor's present or potent in you as you face this challenging situation the next time. It's kind of imagining as you go home, this is with you, or the next time the event occurs, this is with you, or the thought arises about this thing, this is with you. Okay. So, how is that? What do you see about that? So we have suffering, the cause of suffering. We have the first three noble truths right there. The noble truth, or as the Buddha said, probably the ennobling truth, to recognize suffering, that it ennobles us to recognize dukkha, or suffering. And then it ennobles us to really face and admit and be big enough to own personally that the cause of our suffering is our own clinging and craving. It's not the only cause, but it's a major cause. And then third, the ennobling recognition that when we relax the craving and the clinging, so goes the suffering. Pretty good. Three noble truths right in our own experience. Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you. That's great. Self-compassion, undoing craving.
Pardon?
Self-compassion, undoing craving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Along those lines, I'll just add, sometimes it's just embracing uncomfortable feelings.
Yeah.
Like,
mindfully letting them be. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And to underline that, just simply acceptance sometimes, or just simply awareness of. Who knew? Yeah.
And when you really get near it, it kind of, it's really uncomfortable. And but then I was just, it was uncomfortable enough to where I wanted to let go of it enough and stop suffering so much that I was willing to kind of just be right there.
Great. Thank you. Really, the power of mindfulness, in a sense. Yeah, great.
I listened to a Buddhist talk a couple of weeks ago in which a novel idea was interested introduced to me, and that is acceptance and the loving compassion, the softening, but then also the hara, the strength.
Mm.
So for me, sometimes I cannot get into acceptance because there's so much aversion.
Mm.
Sometimes I'm just so afraid and shut
yeah.
down. But I can usually connect with strength.
Right.
That's symbolized by the rock quality.
Yeah.
The stillness quality. There is always that stillness.
Mm.
And I've been meditating for 40 some years, and so I know I can always connect with that stillness.
Mm.
And so that's helpful to me, because after all these years, I've still got so much aversion and so much attachment. But that stillness helps me get a little bit of distance from it. If I
yeah. Yeah.
Sitting for 3 minutes. That's enough stillness to remember the strength.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you very much. Yeah. Great. Yeah, great.
For me, it's compassion for family members and looking at what they have done, have accomplished, or have avoided in terms of negative stuff, rather than being judgmental about, well, okay, they've done all this, but they should do this more stuff too there. So I've backed away from that judgment part on them and tried to extend compassion when I talk to them or communicate, which is usually over the phone because of Alaska. And it really helps me to be detached but compassionate.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. Yeah, please.
Where I was driving my car, I think it was last week, my daughter and her friend, and there was this driver behind us that every time the light turned green, there was this crazy honking, and it happened at every single light. And of course, I caught every red light in Central San Rafael that day. I mean, I was like starting to go cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, and I found my spiral starting, and I could feel it coming on, and I felt like I have a choice here, almost like a fork in the road. I can either get myself overwrought and get upset and know the kids were getting agitated and annoyed, or I can choose to be conscious and engage with warmth and compassion and make a conscious choice about how I'm going to be in this moment, because it really was make or break, and the kids were escalating, and it was hot and I was tired at the end of the day. So I chose to be, you know, in that warmer space, and then what followed was humor, and we almost made a game out of it. Like, as soon as that we started slowing down, we were counting, like, how long do you think it's going to be before she starts honking? But I got myself out of it. I maintained compassion.
Mm.
We had humor to keep us off track, and they kept the kids engaged, and they made a game out of it.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
But there was a conscious choice there, which really surprised me, which I know is a part of the work that we do here. So.
Yeah, and there's, like, as other people have said, if I get it, you were doing various things, in effect, that helped relax or turn down the dial on the urgency, the need for it to be other than what it was.
Yes,
and yeah, that's right, and dialing down the upset reactions to it as well. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Well, so you can see the chain in a way, right? It's like sequences. We start with, you know, so we're suffering, then maybe we, if we want, we can work backwards. What's the clinging? What's the craving? What's the insistence? What's the positionality? What's the attachment in this that's causing this suffering? And then how can I practice with that clinging? That's it, right there. And one thing I just want to reflect back to you that I'm really quite struck by. Basically, most of the Buddha Dharma is about insight. That's what the word vipassana means, insight. And including insight that's not conceptual, but seeing in, insight, seeing in, directly observing that the flow of experiencing is really transient and insubstantial and empty of substance, and a completely impossible, non-existent basis for reliable happiness. That's kind of the essence of sight into insight. And yet, most of what we actually draw upon, most of what people were talking about, right, wasn't particularly insight. It was more what I would call emotional, right? It was warm-hearted. It was bringing compassion. It was making a game out of it. It was accessing strength. And I just find, as a teacher, right, that's really quite interesting, isn't it? And it's true for me, too. My go-tos are, they're emotional. They're in the body. Insight helps some, but a lot of it's emotional. And it makes me glad about the degree to which we can talk about and explore methods for relaxing craving that are more based on feeling and sensation, right? Not just based on clarity of insight. And there is a place for clarity of insight that's categorical, that does really recognize that experience itself, you can't grasp it. So when we try to grasp it, we hurt ourselves and others. The last thing is, just to underline it, then I'll be quiet, and I have to leave fairly quickly tonight myself. When you recognize a factor in the mind, maybe it's humor, maybe it's a sense of strength, maybe it's recognizing the catness of others, whatever it is, right? There really is a place for installing it in your brain, for doing what the Buddha called bhavana, or cultivation. How do we cultivate these powerful factors so they become more and more automatic? There's a lot of psychology about what's called dual process theory. This is the distinction between deliberate and automatic processing. There's a place for deliberate processing, where the next time we're upset, we think, what's my suffering? What is the clinging that's causing it? And how could I undo that clinging, including through insight as well as other means? There's a place for that. But most processing is automatic, because automatic processing doesn't take a lot of resources, so we can allocate resources for other things. How do we acquire positive automatic processing? Because a lot of automatic processing is negative, isn't it? Right? How do we help ourselves? I'm going to mispronounce it, I hope not. Automaticize, there we go. How do we help ourselves automaticize positive factors in the mind? Right? And there's a whole technology of that. I'm really exploring that. My class is about that, on taking in the good and stuff. A lot of it really boils down to extend the positive experience, making it as rich as possible, and then particularly prime your memory stores so your brain is sticky for this resource experience by intending and sensing that it sinks in. That's the essence of it, a dozen seconds at a time. So that's just a suggestion for you. When you do identify what is a factor of the undoing of craving and clinging, help it sink in. You earned it. Don't let it run through your fingers. Help it become more and more automaticized. Okay. How about we sit for a minute, then we'll wrap up. there be a mind without craving. We all have a week without craving, or at least less.